You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 6 August, Andy Warhol was born on this day, 1928. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks, Head of Research at FNB Wealth and Investments. The Japanese story continues. We'll get her take on that. And Pick and Pay, if we've got a moment, I want to ask her about that. Subscribed for twice as many shares. Good sign. Bruce Strong from Impact. His profits fall about a third, and they're entering the water storage business. Skalklo, PSG, Old Oak, tracking the 5-year passive versus active of two large asset managers. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Motorists get another month's reprieve at fuel stations. International product prices and a strong rand help bring petrol down, third month in a row, and diesel. Business Day, Pick and Pay shareholders embrace turnaround strategy. Writes off of 8.2 billion in subscriptions, more than double what they actually wanted to raise of 4 billion. Morning markets, US was red, S&P and NASDAQ down 3%. Over in the East, mostly green, Sydney up 0.7%, Tokyo up 10.25%, Hong Kong up 0.1%, and Tencent down 1.6%. Commodities are red, gold, $2,451, Brent $77.14, Platinum $925, Palladium $843, Rand $1,848, Bitcoin $55,800. Top 40 opening call, 750 points to the green, that is a 1% higher open.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. So the tough questions, I suppose. The Japanese yen unwinding of the carry trade, where you could borrow yen at zero rates and then invest it somewhere else and make a nice, supposedly risk-free profit, which has kind of vanished as rates start to rise in the US. I mean, is this a small little storm in a teacup? Is this of bigger picture concerns? I mean, the Nikkei was down 25% in what, less than a month, bounced back 10% this morning. How are you reading all of this?
Yes, so I think that there has been kind of two separate issues here. I think we've had, firstly, a broader market correction that has impacted global markets, particularly in the US. And that has been a function of the tech rotation, more recently, recession fears, and then heightened geopolitical risk. And that has impacted European markets as well as Asian markets broadly overall. And then we had this story with Japan. So already the indices in Japan were under pressure because of a broader market correction. And then the carry trade unwinds. So the fears that were sparked around a potential emergency rate cuts in the US, potentially deeper rate cuts in the US because of the US data that we saw coming out on Friday, forced that carry trade to unwind exceptionally quickly. And I would term what happened in Japan yesterday almost a flash crash. You remember flash crashes, Simon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So what I think happened is a flash crash, but within a broader market correction and a healthy normal market correction to more fairer values, because I had a look at some of the valuations of the stocks overnight, and they actually look to be offering more fair value than looking cheap or expensive, particularly in the US. I think it's probably a different story in Japan because they had that extra flash crash inside the correction.
I take your point. I've forgotten about flash crashes. I remember those. And you'd wake up in the morning and things had collapsed and recovered sort of while you were sleeping. And definitely, I like that. It was happening within a bigger context and me getting some better valuations. A quick move on to Pick and Pay. They wanted to raise $4 billion. They got excess subscription for almost $8 billion. I suppose good news for Sean Summers and his team that the market is gung-ho for their turnaround strategy. Long way to go, but a good first step.
Yes, it's absolutely, it's a first good step. I'm not that enthused about their turnaround strategy because I actually don't think it matters that much anymore. I think what you have now for Pick n Pay is you have a much better balance sheet. You have the Boxer IPO coming online that will help them as well. Then you have the cyclical tailwinds of lower interest rates and lower inflation that will help the consumer, and the structural tailwinds of better consumer confidence now that the election is behind us and things seemingly looking a little bit better for South Africa from a structural perspective. I think the turnaround will be great, but I don't actually think it matters anymore. So I think Pick n Pay will come out of this regardless of that implementation.
I take your point. And they've got sort of some things beyond their control that are actually going in the right direction for them now, which perhaps helps. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, is around the wild swings in Japan. I mean, down 25% in less than a month, up 10% in less than one evening. Is this going to collapse markets further? Or is Chantal saying, is this a flash crash? And we can all kind of vaguely move on. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
When you stay invested over time in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Bruce Strong, CEO of Impact. Results for 6 months ending June saw revenue up 1.1%, HEPS off a third dividend of 30 cents for the period. Bruce, a tough period, and I think we sit here in early August and forget that for those 6 months, we had an election a month before the period end, and we had load shedding for at least the first 3.5 months or so, and still some challenges with logistics. It was still a very tough environment for those period.
That's absolutely correct, Simon. And the other thing that people seem to have forgotten is that there was no peak in December last year, you know, over the Christmas period. So that meant that a lot of our customers and their customers down throughout the supply chain started the year with high inventories anyway. And that was followed by what could only be described as a relatively weak Easter. And so there was no peak in Christmas, no peak at Easter, and all the consequential issues that one faces as a manufacturer because of that.
It's a good point. You're a manufacturer, but of course, in many cases, your products will be ending up in the hands of consumers. And it has been a very tough, two, three, 4 years for the South African consumer.
Yes, that is true. And that's why we're quite fortunate that we are aligned to some sectors which are not consumer dependent in South Africa. So you may have read in our results announcement, you know, we do quite a fair amount of packaging for fruit exports.
Yeah.
And our sales to the fruit export sector were up, notwithstanding the many challenges they faced with the ports and with a number of other matters, you know, like weather and things like that. So, but we still saw some growth there. And then we're also making bags for convenience shopping, like delivery bags for home deliveries, like Checkers 6060 and others. And that's growing nicely. So, you know, we're fortunate to be in sectors that are not only consumer spending dependent, but with the change of consumer spending patterns, we're benefiting from that. So despite our numbers coming down, we still are very profitable, and we've got a number of projects that are ongoing, which really mean that the future would look quite bright for our business, we think.
I want to come to some of those projects, and particularly your Africa tanks. But the paper was under pressure, but exports are doing well. And we've chatted before around this, where you are exporting, and that's a good market for you.
Yeah, the export increased about 36% when it came to containerboard. Having said that, the prices are still quite suppressed globally even, because while the prices increased on the back of costs going up across most paper manufacturers, the margins are still quite thin on the export front. So it's still not ideal, but it is at least an avenue. And because of our relatively good position in terms of competitiveness from our Felixton paper mill, which is a world-class by any measure, we're able to export profitably there. And that came through in the period, and we hope in the second half we'll be able to do more of that.
And plastics, I mean, certainly plastic volumes did well, but it's tough everywhere, but plastics perhaps less tough.
Well, as you may have seen, we've invested extensively in our returnable transit packaging sector, which is bins and crates. There, you know, by the end of next year, we'll be doing four times the revenue we did 5 years ago. So it's a tremendous growth story and profitable growth. And that's not only because of people wanting more returnable transit packaging, But because we built a really strong business in terms of competitiveness and our manufacturing costs in South Africa. So that's been beneficial. And then in our other plastics business, where we did rationalize somewhat last year, we are seeing good uptake of some of the new products we're bringing to the market, which is very encouraging. So notwithstanding the sector being under pressure, we managed to grow that business both in revenue and volumes during the last half.
You also acquired, I mentioned earlier, 30% interest in Africa Tanks. So it's a small stake. They manufacture plastic water tanks, residential, commercial, agricultural markets. And this has been, I mean, for a while now, folks have been saying Eskom and load shedding will be solved. The next problem is water. And you're kind of getting ahead of that curve, although some Joburg residents will say we've already got water problems.
Yeah, we are seeing a need across most of the country for people to provide some form of water storage to buffer, you know, the interruptions that come from municipalities and others. And what's particularly encouraging about this business is Africa Tanks uses blow molded technology mm-hmm. to produce their tanks, which is different to how the rest of the tanks in the market are produced. They generally are produced with rotor molded processes. And in a blow molded process, you've got much better control over the quality of the tank. And also the qualities, the type of tank. So you can put hygienic material on the inside. You can put a UV protection material in the middle and on the outside, which gives you a number of very much improved properties, both in terms of strength and in terms of its hygiene and other safety factors. And we think that that is where the market will move to. And we're very pleased to be invested in a business that can grow from its current base throughout the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And staying with challenges, I mean, you've got solar PV. You made the point that you actually saved some 18 million in electricity costs during the first half. And you know, a lot of folks think, well, the solar was going in because it's green and renewable. And those are both true. And because Eskom's unreliable, also true. But actually, there's a cost saving as well.
And that was the original reason for us putting solar in. We started putting in solar long before it was a big load shedding problem. We put it in because we could take advantage of the high tariff periods using our solar or storing it in one form or another and save the costs. It turns out that it's also helped us during load shedding, but the main objective was to save costs, and that's what it's done.
Yeah, load shedding, and I'm touching lots of wood, as I say, it seems to mostly be behind us at this point. Bruce Strong, CEO, Impact, always appreciate the time.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Skulk Lowe from PSG Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the early morning time. Something I've been watching with interest over, and I can't believe it's been 5 years already. It goes all the way back to July 2019. And we should stress this is unofficial. But Magda Wojcicka, of course, CEO of Signia, challenged Orbis and said that her S&P 500 ETF would beat the global equity fund from Orbis. And the short version is, as you put out the data yesterday on your Twitter account, there's S&P absolutely did. Well, S&P and ZAR, we should stress.
Good morning, Simon. Yeah, what a fun unofficial challenge. I actually sort of named it unofficial challenge back then because, yeah, as you mentioned, 22 June, well, let's call it end of June, Magda actually threw down the gauntlet the first time. And she actually put, you know, sort of a challenge behind it. She said, well, and I read her tweet, I will bet Alan Gray 1 million rand that Signia's fund outperform over 5 years. Will Alan Gray take the bet? Mm. And so it went on for a week or three, and I just thought, no, this is just going to be too fun to not do this. We started the challenge in July 2019, and wow, I can't believe it. As you mentioned, 5 years, how 5 years has flown by so quickly. But yeah, you mentioned it in the beginning, the S&P 500 definitely having a fun time. So, and let's just be honest. I mean, I'm going to put my cards on the table now. Mm-hmm. When originally, a lot of people usually ask, my inputs, what do I think? And I was leaning, and I actually said it back then, I would be leaning, the S&P 500 was coming off such a massive, massive run, not only over those 5 years, but pretty much those last 9 years. And I definitely thought that it was the time for value. And why do I say that? I also do a monthly data where I usually compare the MSCI growth against the MSCI value. Even on that stage, it was massively, massively distressed. And when I say, you know, that value shares were lagging the growth shares by a country mile in 2019. So in general, I thought, no, not using either one of these two funds, let's have some fun. Let's run this. And why is this important? I think, you know, so many people, so many followers has highlighted the fact that, I mean, you're comparing apples with pears. I mean, Orbis Global Equities, firstly, as the name says, is a global equity fund, currently only investing 52% in the US, got exposure to emerging markets, 16% as we currently sit here. And they actually highlighted in their fact sheet, you know, they say, you know, these equities, which implies their own equities, you know, are selected using extensive proprietary research and it invests in equities considered to offer superior fundamental value. There's the word again, value. So value lagged. We had things called the Magnificent Seven. And yeah, the end is history. Signal one.
It is the point. And we should be clear, Orbis never took up on the million, so there's no million rand being changed by anyone here. But it, you know, in the one sense, folks would be like, this is an active versus passive debate. The other sense, and I take your point, and I remember back then as well in mid-2019, and I looked at US equity markets and thought, man, this can't go another 5 years. The truth of the matter is markets can do crazy stuff, and this is a case of it. I mean, the S&P has been... It's been a wild decade, almost decade plus for that index, and it's just kept on going.
And I think the most important point, I mean, usually when you get a fund who sees himself as value managers and they really outperform everything, even in a sort of that growth cycle, you need to ask question marks. Now, I think the most important point, when you look at both these funds, both of them outperformed the MSCI All Country World Index, which would say... That's a good thing. Both great funds. But listen to this. I mean, over this five-year period, and I've done it in Rand, over this five-year period, you know, the Signia Itrix, you know, S&P 500 ETF, 150% over 5 years, 124% by Orbis Global Equity. So even if you could not decide 5 years ago and just invested both these companies, you would have had... you know, despite the fact that we had things like COVID, despite the thing that we had the you know, inflation crisis, wars in numerous places all over the world, you still yielded a growth in rand terms more than 124%. So that I would say that's it was a great exercise, it was fun to do.
Yeah, I mean, more than doubling your money in 5 years. That is, I mean, that's plus 15% returns. A quick other question. I mean, the point comes back is that this is also, in part, and Warren Buffett did this many years ago, for the know-nothing, keep-it-simple investor, the ETFs are, I mean, you can't go wrong.
No, I think that was sort of the whole message of this whole exercise. You don't have to choose. It's not the one or the other. I mean, you don't need to put you know all your eggs in one basket. There's you know fantastic active managers out there, and there's fantastic passive products out there. Why not just combine them? I mean, yeah, we do, and in this case, I think that is that was a sort of the proof of the pudding here was in the eating.
Yeah, absolutely. ETFs in the core, and then satellite. Go pick your active managers, or be your own active manager if you think you can do. How do you got to double your money in 5 years? So it's a tough benchmark there. Skulk Low, PSG Old Oak, and you'll find them on the Twitters at Skulk Low. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. I was chatting with Clyde Parsons from BrightRock yesterday about life insurance and how we manage it and managing the costs and how it gets priced. We asked her, does your life insurance suit your needs? A third said, yep, perfectly. A quarter each said, not sure if it's right. Another quarter saying you don't have any. And the rest were saying, just can't afford it. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Actively managed ETFs.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.